Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Gene Driscoll, U of I legend, seeks room to develop. After decades, Illini wants to see another way of doing things. This article is written by Julie Wirth and is based out of Urbana. Legendary Illinois wheelchair racing champion Gene Driscoll is leaving the university where she studied, raced, and worked over the past three decades to take a new development position at North Carolina State University. Driscoll will be Executive Director of Development for the College of Design at North Carolina State in Raleigh, beginning November 27th. Driscoll, who dominated wheelchair racing in the 1990s, has been Senior Director of Development for the U of I College of Liberal Arts and Sciences for 3 years. Before that, she was in a fundraising position with the College of Applied Health Sciences for more than 8 years. She said the North Carolina State job represents a promotion to a leadership position, which she needs to advance in her career. She will lead fundraising opportunities for the college and manage its development staff. I've spent my entire development career at the University of Illinois, so I think in terms of personal growth, it's good to see how it's done in another place, she said on Monday. And once I gain experience outside of the University of Illinois, I'm definitely open to coming back in a different role, she said. I love this place. It has changed my life. Driscoll said she is alternately excited and nervous, thinking both, I did it, and what have I done? Top U of I officials said Monday they were sorry to see her go. She's just been a tremendous asset for advancement, just a person who has helped define the university in so many ways. We're so proud to be associated with her and so sad to see her go, said Interim Provost John Wilkin. Driscoll won the Boston Marathon an unprecedented 8 times, earned 14 Olympic and Paralympic medals, and held the women's world record wheelchair time in the marathon for 17 years. She was also inducted into the U.S. Olympic Hall of Fame. She's had such a profound impact on this university. I know she will always hold this place near and dear to her heart, said Chancellor Robert Jones. A Milwaukee native, Driscoll was born with spina bifida, but didn't start using a wheelchair until she was 15 after falling from her bike and breaking her hip. She was inspired to race after watching Illinois' Sharon, that's S-H-A-R-O-N, Hedrick, H-E-D-R-I-C-K, win the first Olympic demonstration event for wheelchair racers, the 800 meters, in Los Angeles in 1984. After taking up racing in high school, she was recruited to Illinois in 1987 by Hedrick's husband, Brad, then coach of the Illinois wheelchair basketball team and later director of the U of I's Division of Disability Resources and Education Services. She was reluctant at first, given Wisconsin's rivalry with Illinois, but Hedrick persisted. It felt really good that somebody wanted me on their team. Brad convinced me that I could come to Illinois and make a difference and have a great academic career as well as an athletic career, she said. Once on campus, Driscoll competed in both basketball and track road racing, and track coach Marty Morse, that's M-O-R-S-E, started pushing her to compete in a marathon. She said no. After 2 years, she agreed to train for one, the 1989 Chicago Marathon. She hated the longer, more painful 20-mile workouts out on country roads. There's a lot more time for the farm dogs to find you, she said. Being so low in the racing chair, you're right at teeth level. She finished the marathon in under 2 hours, qualifying her for the Boston Marathon the following spring. She remembers being on the starting line, yelling at Marty under my breath, and thinking she was never going to make it through the Boston Hills. But 26.2 miles later, she had won her first Boston Marathon and broke the world record by almost 7 minutes. The rest was history. When I talk with Brad Hedrick, and I talk about Marty Morse, I get emotional, she said. These are people who have had a tremendous lifelong impact on me. I will forever be grateful for the relationship I had with them, both as a coach and as mentors. They helped me see things I didn't see in myself. Athletic Director Josh Whitman said Driscoll was a pioneer and remains one of the university's most recognizable athletes, right up there with football great Dick Butkus and basketball favorite Dee Brown. I've been so impressed with what she represents, he said. She, as much as anybody, really embodies the University of Illinois and so many of the values that we have as an institution. She's a tremendous source of pride for the university. Driscoll earned 2 U of I degrees, a bachelor's in speech communication in 1991, and a master's in rehabilitation administration in 1993. In 2001, less than a year after her retirement from racing, Driscoll agreed to go to Ghana to conduct a wheelchair sports clinic through the organization Joni and Friends, which distributes wheelchairs around the world. The visit had a profound impact on her life and career. Driscoll knew what polio was still, knew that polio was still endemic in Ghana, where wheelchairs were hard to come by and disabilities were often seen as God's punishment. Driscoll herself had to be carried down the steps of the airplane, as there were no jetways where she could use her wheelchair. At the clinic, some people limped into the stadium. Some had crutches, but what I was completely unprepared for were the people who crawled into the stadium on their hands and knees, she said. They had crawled several blocks from a nearby hospital twice a day for the morning and evening sessions of the clinic, she said. The organization brought along 6 racing wheelchairs from Driscoll's equipment sponsor for the 32 clinic participants to use for about 10 minutes each. That was the only time they were up off the ground, she said. It hit me. My life's mission is to help people, or get people, up off the ground, literally and figuratively, she said. Driscoll remained involved with the organization for 10 years. In 2003, she worked with local Rotary clubs to help bring 8 Ghanaian wheelchair athletes and 2 coaches to the U.S., where they were able to train at the U of I and receive their first custom-made racing chairs. She's still in touch with some of the athletes. She sees her development work as an extension of that mission, raising money to provide education to better people's lives, just as the U of I's commitment to disability education changed her life. I believe in education and that it's the key to putting people on a path to success, she said. The next headline reads, Nursing Home, Vote. To sell or to hold fast. Board to weigh move seeking buyer proposals. This is an article written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Urbana. Champaign County board members will get their first review tonight of the proposal for the sale of the county-owned nursing home. The agenda for the board's committee of the whole meeting includes an item calling for the release of a request for proposals for a privately owned firm to buy the 12-year-old facility in East Urbana. If the board approves the RFP this month, the sale of the home could be completed this winter. But that's only if 15 of the board's 22 members agree to sell it. County voters in April approved a ballot measure authorizing the county board to sell the financially troubled facility. But many Democrats, who comprise a majority of the board, have voiced either opposition or skepticism about selling. The proposed request for proposals for the sale of the facility carries a number of stipulations. 1, a minimum purchase price of $11 million. 2, the purchaser assume the existing collective bargaining agreements at the home with the AFSCME employee union. 3, that the purchaser agree to retire all existing employees, or rehire, excuse me, all existing employees who pass a background check and not terminate 10% or more of the employees within the first 60 days following the closing date of the sale, and no more than 20% in the first 6 months after the sale. 4, that for at least 10 years, priority for admissions must be given to Champaign County residents, and that for at least 10 years, a minimum of 50% of the facility's long-term care beds should be set aside or set, yes, for Medicaid patients. 5, that the purchaser must detail how it would work with and be accountable to the public. 6, that the sale of the building is as is and that the county makes no representations or warranties as to the condition of the nursing home. And 7, that the purchaser agrees to maintain a skilled nursing facility with 220 beds until December 31st, 2027. The marketing of the nursing home is being handled by Chicago real estate brokerage firm Marcus N. Millichap. That's M-I-L-L-I-C-H-A-P. A timeline accompanying the request for proposals shows they would be due December 22nd, and then selection of the qualified buyer would be accomplished between January 8th and March 1st, 2018. According to a report from County Auditor John Farney, F-A-R-N-E-Y, the nursing home owes a total of nearly $3.5 million, including more than $100,000 to at least 7 vendors. It also owes various county government funds nearly $2 million. The county board's committee of the whole meeting will begin at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday at the Brookins Administrative Center, located at 1776 East Washington Street in Urbana. The next headline reads, Conservationist hopes to save 2 houses and old YMCA. Unit 4 School Construction. This article is written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Champaign. 11 months after voters gave the Champaign School District the all-clear to build a new Central High School in its old neighborhood, local preservationists hope to put the brakes on its plans to bulldoze three nearby buildings it owns. Tom Garza, G-A-R-Z-A, Executive Director of the Preservation and Conservation Association, said Monday he turned into the Champaign Planning Department the paperwork required to spare three buildings the school district bought for the expansion of Central's campus. Garza said he doesn't believe PACA's proposal to designate as local landmarks the West Church Street structures, commonly known as the Bailey House, 606, Burnham House, 603, and Philip Mansion, or McKinley Family YMCA, 500, run counter to the public's wishes. When people voted for the referendum, it wasn't stated how they were going to accomplish it, he said Monday. The voters were never faced with the information that the district intended to destroy such a large part of the neighborhood. They voted to keep Central Central. They didn't vote to demolish the buildings. This is a trade-off we were never told about. The rebuilt and renovated Central High School isn't expected to welcome its first students until the fall of 2022. The project carries a price tag of $87.1 million. School Board President Chris Klappel said city officials contacted Unit 4 on Monday afternoon to inform the district of PACA's landmark applications. I think there is a process for everything, and they, PACA, are exploring their options, Klappel said. Klappel said he was committed to an open discussion of the issue. I think we can have a public discussion about it, and I know the city is involved in this process, he said. We are the owners of those properties now, and I look forward to having a public discussion about this through the entire process. Garza said, PACA doesn't have the funds it would take to buy the three properties, and even if it did, it seems unlikely that Unit 4 would want to sell them. But we could raise money for saving them if we were given the option, Garza said. The idea is to recognize the houses as being valuable historic properties as opposed to being disposable, he added. We would like the community to recognize it as well. We are concerned with the overall impact on the neighborhood, as well as the ongoing loss of incredible historic properties in Champaign. If PACA is successful in achieving local landmark status, the three buildings would be protected from demolition or exterior alterations, which negatively affect the historic character of the property, according to provisions set by the city's Planning and Development Department. But before that happens, PACA would need to get three rounds of approval. The first could happen as soon as November 2nd, when the Historic Preservation Commission is set to hear the issue, said Champaign Planning and Development Director Bruce Knight. If it advances, the next step would be the Plan Commission. It's set to meet November 15th. That agency would then make a recommendation to the full City Council, which would consider the issue at its December 5th meeting. And now let's take a look at our weather forecast over the next few days. This is provided to us by Greg Soleil and his column on the weather front. Today, 72. Cloudy with few showers, a thunderstorm in spots by afternoon, east to northeast wind, 8 to 16 miles per hour, and gusty. Overnight, period of showers and isolated thunderstorms, gusty. Wednesday, the high is 66, the low is 55, considerable cloudiness, overnight, mostly cloudy. Thursday, the high is 71, the low is 54, it will be partly cloudy. Friday, the high is 77, the low will be 53, it will be mostly sunny. And Saturday, the high is 81, the low is 59. Partly sunny, a shower in spots before noon and late. Illini game time, a 40% chance for a shower. Kickoff temperature should be at around 75 degrees. And now let's take a look at top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. That's R-O-S-S-O-W. On Tuesdays, we'll introduce the kids behind High School Confidential. Today, Urbana's Joey Wright, a 17-year-old senior who has a bright future in this business. He broadcasts and announces many Urbana high school and middle school athletic events, as well as handling morning announcements. On Thursday, Wright will take over the News Gazette's Snapchat account to give us a tour of Urbana on a school day. Follow along at News Gazette. Here's more info on Joey. On Twitter, his handle is at Joey_Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, 99. On Instagram, at Joey, lowercase j, @J_Wright99. So on Twitter, it was a capital J and capital W. On Instagram, that's a lowercase J and W. Next year, I'll be attending college in pursuit of a career in sports broadcasting. In 10 years, I'll be continuing my broadcasting career as I work my way up the ladder in the field. And online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,095,442 page views. The two top stories were: one, superseding indictment, Christensen charged with kidnapping resulting in Scholar's death; two, woman dies in I-74 crash. The two top sports stories: one, high school football scoreboard for October 6th through 7th, 2017, and two, Castleton opts for Wolverines, not Illini. The two top videos were one, video from the first moments of the Las Vegas shooting, and two, game of the week, Twin City Cross Country Meet. And the two top photo galleries: number one, 40 Under 40 Happy Hour 2017, and two, Champagne Cityscape 2017. And now a look at history, in area history. Let's go back to 1917. In 1917, New York Giants pitcher Ruby Benton helped the Giants win their first game of World Series with a 2-0 win over the Chicago White Sox before more than 35,000 at the Polo Grounds. The series stood at 2-1 in favor of the American League team. In 1967, the Champaign School Board voted to ask for a 40-cent increase in its education fund on December 5th. If approved, the education fund rate would increase to $2.45 per $1,000 of assessed valuation. The rate had not increased since 1962. In 2002, Parkland College officials faced a double challenge: limited and uncertain state funding and dramatically increased enrollment. It was a situation being repeated at other area community colleges as well. Officials at Danville Area Community College and Lakeland College in Mattoon said they'd also seen notable increases in enrollment. The fall headcount was 9,540, a 12.5% increase from the previous fall. And now let's read Jim Dye's column, "How Mighty Have Fallen and Could Fall Further." That's the headline from his column today. "Ousted Coach In for Big Legal Fights." University of Louisville basketball coach Rick Pitino was ecstatic as he marveled at his good fortune in securing what was widely perceived as a recruiting triumph. "In my 40-something years of coaching, this is the luckiest I've ever been. I won the Kentucky Derby. Now this is much better," he said of signing 6'7" forward Brian Bowen Jr., that's B-O-W-E-N, an Indiana prep school star from Saginaw, Michigan. That was back in early June, after Louisville secured an out-of-the-blue commitment from Bowen, but well before federal prosecutors filed sweeping charges alleging widespread criminal activities involving the recruitment of elite high school players. Pitino now is singing a different tune. Out of a job and maintaining that he will be vindicated, the 65-year-old coach is on the brink of two major battles, one with his former employer over the balance of his lengthy contract, and the other with the criminal justice system that potentially involves his liberty. In 2015, Louisville signed Pitino to a roughly $51 million contract extension through 2025-26. The extension includes $7.5 million in retention bonuses that kick in every 3 years, beginning in 2017. Four assistant college basketball coaches from Arizona, Oklahoma State, the University of Southern California, and Auburn were among 10 people charged with a variety of offenses involving cash inducements to prospective recruits. The other six men indicted were business types, an Adidas executive, and an assortment of agents and financial advisors. Pitino, who sat near the top of the heap in college basketball, was not charged, but he has been identified widely in news outlets as the unidentified Louisville Coach 2, whose connections to Adidas could make things happen. Pitino, so far, has been the only head coach to lose his job in connection with the federal probe, but the rumor mill has run amok, particularly as it relates to the head coaches associated with the four indicted assistant coaches: Oklahoma State's Lamont Evans, Auburn's Chuck Person, Southern Cal's Tony Bland, and Arizona's Emmanuel Richardson. That includes Arizona's head man, Sean Miller, Auburn's Bruce Pearl, Miami's Jim LaRonga, and Southern Cal's Andy Enfield. The name of Brad Underwood, the University of Illinois' new men's basketball coach, has also surfaced because he worked with indicted assistant Evans at Oklahoma State and the Southern Cal. U of I Chancellor Robert Jones said he does not expect any problems for the U of I as a consequence of the federal probe. It appears so far that Louisville has three coaches caught up in this groundbreaking inquiry. It has already fired Pitino. Over the weekend, it put two assistants, Jordan Fair and Kenny Johnson, on paid administrative leave. That's three coaches, two of whom are referred to as coaches 1 and 2 in the criminal charges and affidavits filed by federal prosecutors. There's no reference to a third Louisville coach in the documents. So far, the New York Times, Louisville Courier Journal, and CBS Sports, all quoting anonymous sources, have identified Pitino as coach 2, who called James Gatto, G-A-T-T-O, a top Adidas shoe executive, ostensibly to arrange a substantial cash payment to Bowen's father and ensure his son's commitment. Pitino has acknowledged calling Gatto, but said Bowen's recruitment had nothing to do with the calls. Louisville's president has acknowledged to reporters that he knows the name of Coach 2, but said it's not the university's place to disclose it. Pitino's lawyer has declined to discuss the identity of Coach 2, but with the walls closing in, Pitino himself isn't really bothering to deny he's Coach 2, stating, "It doesn't matter if I am or not." Pitino apparently means that he breached no rules, despite suggestions to the contrary regarding Coach 2. The charging documents, while not explicit in their identification of Pitino, describe the mystery coach as a mover and shaker, particularly with Adidas. One of the co-conspirators, Augustine, said Coach 2 could arrange payments for a recruit with one phone call. That's not the kind of influence normally associated with an assistant coach. No one swings a bigger club at Adidas, Augustine said. All Coach 2 has to do is pick up the phone and call somebody and say, "These are my guys. They're taking care of us." The Bowen recruitment apparently was sealed with a promised $100,000 payment, four $25,000 installments from Adidas through an intermediary to Bowen's father, Brian Bowen Sr. FBI agent John Vorderis, V-O-U-R-D-E-R-I-S, said in an affidavit that on or about May 27, 2017, Adidas executive Gatto had two telephone conversations with the phone number used by Coach 2. Based on the same, I am aware that on or about June 1, 2017, Gatto had a third telephone conversation with the same phone number used by Coach 2. The affidavit noted that 2 days later, or on or about June 3, 2017, Bowen officially committed to Louisville in return for the commitment by Gatto and Adidas to pay $100,000 to his family. Prior to signing a $160 million 10-year deal with Louisville in August, Adidas had a smaller contractual arrangement, with the university in the neighborhood of $1.5 million a year. The Louisville Courier-Journal, after reviewing the contract, revealed that Pitino received 98% of the money. It reported that in 2015-16, Pitino received $1.5 million under his personal services agreement, while only $25,000 went to the Louisville program. The year before that, Pitino received another $1.5 million, while the department only saw $10,000. Despite issuing a couple vague statements blaming a few bad actors for the scandal now engulfing college basketball, Pitino has said little while admitting he's keeping a purposely low profile. That reticence is in sharp contrast to the outrage he expressed earlier this year when the NCAA imposed sanctions on Louisville's program for hiring strippers and prostitutes to entertain basketball recruits. Pitino said Louisville would appeal the sanctions because it is right, it is just. Personally, I've lost a lot of faith in the NCAA that I've had over the last 35 years with what they just did, he said. The next headline reads, Urbana City Council, welcome that out for startups. Business association offering new, cheaper membership level. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. The Urbana Business Association is courting small startups by offering a new, cheaper membership level for owner-operated organizations. The new level will be $100 per year, below the $150 for a nonprofit or 501c3, and $175 for businesses with 1 to 5 full-time employees. The highest membership level is $625 for businesses with 76 or more full-time employees, according to the Business Association's website. The change was announced by UBA, EBA, that's Urbana Business Association, Executive Director Paris Baldarotta, Baldarotta, at Monday night's Urbana City Council meeting. She said it will go into effect in a few weeks. If you're just starting a business on your own with around one or two owners, Baldarotta said, $100 is feasible. No matter the membership level, Baldarotta said each UBA member has access to all the same benefits, discounts, and services. Also included in the UBA's upcoming changes is a partnership with the Urbana Public Arts Coordinator to allow for events and activities throughout the city and downtown. In other business, the City Council gave its initial approval to allowing Parkland College Police to have access to the area-wide records management system, which contains the entire records of the Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and University of Illinois Police Departments and the Champaign County Sheriff's Office. Adding Parkland to the list at no cost was proposed by the Systems Policy Board. Urbana Police Chief Sylvia Morgan, who sits on that board, said the decision wasn't affected by a Parkland case from September in which campus police chased student Oluwatobi, O-L-U-W-A-T-O-B-I, Mordi, M-O-R-D-I, through the student union. The chase was recorded on cell phone video and shared on social media, receiving over 390,000 views on Facebook. The decision was in discussions long before that chase, Morgan said. This is for Parkland police to see if a suspect has history somewhere else. The City Council also gave initial approval Monday to allocating $30,000 for continued tenant-based rental assistance services within the Urbana Home Consortium. The services would come from the Rosecrans Health Network, according to a city staff report. The next headline reads, Oak Park Hemingway Museum will close on Sunday. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Oak Park. Organizers of the Ernest Hemingway Foundation of Oak Park say the nonprofit historical museum in the Chicago suburb will close on Sunday. Foundation Chairman John W. Barry told the Chicago Tribune that the group needed to pursue a new vision to keep the writer's legacy alive. The foundation will continue to operate Hemingway's birthplace home, in his home, which Hemingway's grandfather, Ernest Hall, built in 1890. The next headline reads, Northwest Indiana, lead testing kits being offered. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of East Chicago, Indiana. The NAACP is distributing free lead testing kits in a northwestern Indiana city where hundreds of people were forced from a public housing complex by lead contamination. The NAACP's Indiana chapter plans to distribute the air, soil, and water testing kits today to students who attend two East Chicago schools. Those tests include instructions on how to test for lead in homes. Additional testing kits will be distributed on October 14th. And today on WDWS 1400 AM, Carl's Matthew Gibb, G-I-B-B, joins host Jim Turpin, on Penny for Your Thoughts at 9 a.m. this morning. Participate by calling 217-356-9397 or by texting 217-351-5357. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. We thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Stay with us for part two, which will be coming up shortly. Also, as a side note, to reach us here at the News Gazette, let me just give you their phone number. You can reach the News Gazette at 1-800-660-READ, R-E-A-D, or you can also call 217-351-5252 with any questions or concerns. Thanks very much. Have a wonderful day.